So now we get to the situation where, as you rightly point out, the largest category in the census is no religion. Now, some of them, many of them, are atheists and agnostics, but that's an active position to have. You'll find a lot of them haven't thought about it enough to know that they're atheist. You know what I mean?
Well, indeed. And I'll come to you in a moment on this, Chris, but I want to ask you, Michael Jensen, you know, from the Anglican point of view, those drop-offs in numbers that we saw in the census, some have linked it to the Royal Commission into institutional responses to child sexual abuse.
Oh, definitely. So I think when churches behave badly, they lose credibility. That's an absolute sort of truism, really. And we need to tidy up our act, as do many institutions in society, by the way, not just religious ones. It's affected volunteer communities of all kinds, and we need to get our act together in order to win the credibility back, like many institutions, as I say. Mm. I think it is interesting. I think it's still more than 52. I think it's 52%. So the Christian majority is still in place. James is exactly right. 30% no religion doesn't mean 30% atheist. It means 30% not choosing a particular religion. A lot of people, I was talking to someone just in the lobby who was saying, I don't have a religion, but I consider myself spiritual.
Yes.
I consider myself to, I believe in a creator being. So the idea of God is still not falling away from consciousness in Australia. That would be true.
Mm. What's your take on that, Chris Schott? Yeah, do you believe that there's an argument now that these numbers are changing?
Well, they're certainly changing. The first start in the consensus last year, I put myself down as a humanist. I believe in human society, etc. That's what I describe myself. I didn't put myself down as an atheist, and that's been my involvement in public life as a humanist is a better place to be. Secondly, there's no doubt that that irrespective of anything else, the census shows over the last 30 years, and partly because the questions have been better placed for people to say no religion now, and we want to, in the next census, if people who say they have a religion and nominate whatever the religion is, we'd like a sub-question is, how many times do you go and worship at the mosque,
really?
At the church?
Really?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's a performative version of religion.
No, because that may well show that there are, of course, of the 50% that Michael says is actually only nominal, and it's not, they're not active. And I think that's reasonable information that the census should show.
Well, the National Church Life Survey, which is conducted, could show you that very easily.
But the census is the official, under the law and the Constitution of Australia.
So much
that
as we trust
the
it.
Official,
following
the, having yes, the Labor Party, it does political surveys. There's a credibility question that is what that is compared with the Liberal survey.
Let's not slide into direct politics in this conversation.
Well, you can't avoid it.
I wanted to ask Chris a question, though.
You can't avoid politics and religion.
If I could ask you a question,
they make the
Chris,
law.
Well, which is that you call yourself a humanist. Is humanist not a set of quasi? You said I believe in humanist values. Yuval Noah Harari is an atheist. He calls secular humanism a religion. So why are humanists able to impose their religious values on the society? And traditionally religious people not.
Because we believe in the argument is individually done, and it, when you get to a particular issue, I'm not imposing the humanist doing so. We don't have there is a humanist society, and it believes in the separation of the church and state. It doesn't go around saying, write a law because there's some theological structure behind us. No,
okay.
The humanists want an open debate and that the law is written so irrespective of your religion or non-religion, you're not being compelled and bound by a law that affects you on a religious basis.
I would argue that you do.
One thing that's very certain about this conversation is that it isn't one without a lot of emotion, I can hear.
Well, of course, it's what's wrong with emotion.
But I want to get back to the question, and that is about the lack of interest in this particular event and what it tells us about the nature of atheism in this country. Listening into us talking is Adam from Collaroy. Good morning, Adam.
Oh, hi, Cathy. How are you?
Well, thanks. Now, you used to be a very militant atheist, you say.
Yes, that's right. It's sort of in the university days. And there used to be atheist clubs at university, but again, I think they sort of lack from this participation. I think a lot of these militant atheists, and as I said, I used to be one myself, learned quite quickly that I had friends who had turned religious around that time, but the bloody trench warfare of trying to convert them and them converting you, it just, you could easily lose friends from it. So I learned very quickly not to be so militant about it, just to let them be and let them come to their own conclusions. And, yeah, it just wasn't worth the pain that was being inflicted on everyone.
Mm. Now, what do you think are the responsibilities of an atheist? Are there any?
I think it's just leading by example. And, yeah, leading by example, letting people work out their own ideas. I've got two children, only separated by a year or two. One is, I'm sure, sort of agnostic, but the other one is more religious than the other. But I try very hard to be as neutral as I can, answer the questions that I can, but try not to swing them one way or the other and let them just come up to their own conclusions.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks very much for that, Adam. It's an interesting question.
I'm still very much an atheist, and we'll call myself that. It's, yeah, it's not something I preach, and I think religion is, in some cases, is a good thing, but also just lead by example. Something interesting, though, I've just... I've found that around the collapse of communism, it was like a lot of the religious groups had a big burst and they think, aha, atheism failed. And because just on your point that when churches do bad things, that's when numbers seem to drop off. I found that around the collapse of communism, that's when atheism
the same effect
cracked as well, and religion seemed to burst out from that.
Well, that's an interesting theory. All right, thanks very much for that, Adam. I can
Kirstie,
hear you,
can
Chris.
Can I talk about the collapse?
Well, I was actually going to ask you what the responsibilities of atheism are, and whether as perhaps we're seeing in this example, is it just walking away from having any idea of organised thought around civil society, or are there very clear responsibilities that atheists and atheism takes on?
Well, first of all, about the convention, I went to the first one in 2010, which was 3 days, I think nearly 3,000 people registered. The second one they had in 2012, less people. This one, I don't know how much of it was published beforehand, etc. But one of the things that was said to me is that people went to the first conference, heard all the stuff, and don't need to go back and hear it again and again, like going to a church service every so often. And that's part of why the Freedom of Thought movement, which covers a broader description. And secondly, there are a lot of people, including me, who are not a member of the Atheist Society per se, that would rather a broader description of what I would call and others call freedom of thought movement, and you bring in, make sure that the humanists, the sceptics, the rationalists, and then all of those and other groups, including maybe Christian groups, who do absolutely support the separation of church and state. But I think the real issue is we've discovered that this movement is very we're all idiosyncratic in our own view, and irrespective of whether there's a conference or not, we still are in discussion and debate, and we move on. So I also think I understand only yesterday when I was invited to join this program, I made some inquiries, as you say. I think there were maybe some structural issues of why that conference didn't meet the deadline to get enough registrations to guarantee the running costs of hiring the venue, et cetera, et cetera, for it. But it's run by the Atheist Society. Yeah. I think it should be run by a broader range of what I call and others call the free thought movement.
Chris, just before I let you go, there is a bit of response to your comments that you thought that people who put a religion on the census against their name, or not their name, I suppose it is anonymous, that they should attend church or attend a mosque or attend a temple. People on the text line are saying... do you think that it's outrageous, actually, in fact, to suggest that to identify with a faith that you have to attend some form of worship? That's
I would like them to come, by the way. 8 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 5:30. Please do show up. If you're an Anglican, it's great to
Michael,
see you.
Yeah, thanks for that, Michael. What's your point there, Chris?
My point is to find out under the census, which is established in the Constitution of Australia every 5 years, that information statistically is available about the true nature of our society. And I don't think it's an unreasonable question to say, well, you declare, like if someone says, I'm a humanist, how many times do I go to a humanist meeting or forum?
Yeah, well, how do you demonstrate?
And I would be happy to tick a box saying probably two meetings a year or one meeting a year would be about it. And I just think it gives a broader description of our society. This, and as it's anonymous, by the way, the information of what you tick in the box is guaranteed privacy and security. It's not a matter of chasing people down, like in a totalitarian society, etc. No, absolutely not. But it does give a broader picture of the nature of our society.
Okay.
And
all
that
right.
is useful.
All right.
So this is all, you know, kind of interesting and useful box ticking, etc. But I'd really like to see the atheists gather together and talk about the ultimate questions in life. And do that in a public way. I'd love to hear them try to address what I think is the really difficult question for atheists, which is, not to say that they don't have an answer to it, which is, how do you live a good life without God in the world? How is there meaning? It's a difficult, as Sam Harris says, doesn't mean it's an impossible question, but that question, as it's discussed, is really...
But if you want to live a life, which God should I follow? The Muslim God?
You're not hearing me. You're not hearing me, Chris.
What I'm saying is respect.
I'm saying that it is, as Sam Harris, atheist, says, it's a difficult question to answer. That doesn't mean there aren't profound answers to the question, but once that's actually on the table and we're talking about what does it mean to live a good and ethical life, and is that possible without God, without a creator God, then... That's an interesting moment. That we're enriched by that discussion.
And you wrote quite eloquently, you say that when we don't care about the ultimate questions, we really are at our worst. Even no faith is better
Chris
than
would
a
agree.
Lazy faith.
No.
So it's about your argument then is about adherence and about the observance of beliefs. Now, Chris, I'm going to bring James Carlton back here. James, is this what your program's like every week?
Shot to come on the program. Reverend Jensen's already been on the program a couple of times, so it is kind of like that. But this week we're
still got the scars.
Huh?
I've still got the scars.
This weekend we're touching something much less controversial, which is Iran. I mean, let me just ask you, the Iranian Revolution. It's the anniversary this Sunday. Let me put it to you that it wouldn't have happened without a tiny Queensland town just south of Rockhampton called Mount Morgan. The reason being was they struck oil in Iran with a few million dollars that was made by an Australian fellow named William Knox Darcy. He wouldn't have made that money had he not struck gold earlier near Rockhampton, and the whole fate of the Middle East could have been different.
Okay, well, that's what's ahead on God Forbid with James Carlton on Radio National. Make sure you put that into your search engine. Thank you all for talking with us this morning. We've started to scratch the surface. We didn't get anywhere near the bottom of this argument, but it's been great to have you along. Michael Jensen is a rector at St Mark's Anglican Church in Darling Point. Chris Schott is with the National Secular Lobby.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for your company today. I'm Cassie McCullough. See you tomorrow.